Good morning or good afternoon to welcome you to today's Internet Seminar, which is a Brownfields nonprofit outreach training, which has been sponsored by the EPA Region 6 Brownfields Program. My name is Jean Balance, and I work here in EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division. And I'll be serving as the moderator for today's session. We are going to wait just a few more minutes while I cover some basic housekeeping rules and introductions, while we allow for a few other people to hop on the lines. But in the meantime, again, I just want to remind people of a few housekeeping items for our online seminars here at Cluin. When you signed up for today's event, you were given a specific URL or homepage, which is the starting point for today's session, which included a description of the event, links to download the materials in a variety of formats, links to additional resources, and a link to a feedback form. So there's also descriptions and contact information for myself and all of our instructors today, and that information will remain there during the session as well as afterwards. So you're welcome to refer back there at any point in time if you like. If there's any information or questions or comments that can't be addressed during today's session, you can also go back to that homepage to look up contact information for our instructors and reach out to them by email or phone. Those of you who are joining us on the phone lines, we do ask again, as I have when we open the lines, to keep yourself on mute. You can use your own mute button if you like, or be sure to hit *6 to put yourself on mute now using our local command. We will have time in breaks to do questions and answers. They are asking that, if possible, to submit the comments or questions online using an online question form, which I'll walk you through in just a minute. So until then, we just ask that you do keep your telephone lines on mute, and that's going to help us keep the background noise to a minimum and make sure that we don't disrupt the speakers. Also, a reminder, don't put the call on hold. Sometimes your organization may have commercials or background music which can be disruptive. So just use your local mute button or hit *6 now to place your phone on mute. At the appropriate time for questions and answers, we'll provide the instructions on how to unmute, and the unmute command is #6. So *6 to mute, #6 to unmute. Again, everyone should have moved past the homepage and should be looking at the seminar materials in one version or another. Those of you who are looking at the slides online and are streaming the audio, again, those of you who may have printed it in front of you, I'd ask that you all move on to the next slide, slide number 2. And if you are looking at the slides online, you'll see a couple of options to navigate through the materials. There are a series of orange icons that appear along the very top of the slides today, again, looking at slide number 2. The arrowed buttons will allow you to move our page through the materials. A single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow to the left will move you backwards one slide. You can also use the numbered links that appear on the left of your screen. The instructors will be announcing as they move through those slides, so you want to be sure to pay attention and keep up with the pace of the presentation. You also will see a small button online that looks like a small home or house icon that will bring you back to the seminar homepage, where you can look at all of the information and overview for today's session. The question mark icon that you see above those slides is what we'll use to submit online questions or comments, and again, that's the preferred method for today's session, although there will be time to do them verbally if you can't do them online. You want to be sure to keep your pop-up blocker turned off, and when you click that question mark button, a new window will pop up with your information, and you can submit a comment or question at any time. For the online submission, you don't have to wait to the appropriate time or break for Q&A. You can submit them at any point during the session, and when we get to the time or the break allotted at the end of the presentation for questions and answers, we'll read them off to the instructors on your behalf so that they can address your comments or questions. Another reminder, if you are having any problems or you need assistance today, you can use the question mark icon as well to submit technical problems. Just be sure to include a telephone number where you can be reached, and one of our support staff will be sure to contact you to troubleshoot the issue. You can also contact our technical support directly at 301-589-5318. Again, 301-589-5318. There will be time again at the end of the session to go over Q&A at that point in time, and we're going to remind everybody how to take their phone lines off of mute. Before, though, we close everything out, after the questions and answers today, you'll be directed to one final slide, which will bring you to two important links. The first link is a link of additional resources. That's available on the seminar homepage as well. But on that additional resources page, you'll see a collection of resources that the instructors have put together, from websites to movies relevant to today's topic. You'll also have the opportunity to download today's materials in a few different formats. The second link, which is also very important, will be a link to a feedback form. And when we're all said and done, we ask that you take just a minute or two to fill out that feedback form. It's a very simple form. And be sure to answer all of the questions, because there are a number of them that have been specifically set up for this particular session. We do read each and every single one of those responses, and that type of feedback is how we decide to continue to offer these free online sessions on Cluin. If you're looking for confirmation of your participation today, When you submit the feedback form, there's an option or a box to check on that form to have a confirmation email sent to you for your records. So again, if you want confirmation of your participation, you'll have to stay on the line for the full session and then fill out the feedback form. The last and final reminder I have for everyone today is that this session is being recorded and will be archived and available for free to replay from a few different places. If you're new to the Clue-In sessions, I encourage you to go to cluein.org/training and follow the links to our archive. You'll see a collection of hundreds of free online training that we've been delivering here since the late 90s. We also have a podcast in iTunes, and again, you'll find instructions on the Clue-In website on the training page there, so you can subscribe to our podcast and receive our latest training archives as soon as they're available. Usually takes us about 2 weeks or so to get an archive posted up there. So those are all the basic rules and housekeeping items that I have to cover for today. So with that, I think I'm going to formally segue over and move everybody over to slide number 3. And again, you are here for the Brownfields Nonprofit Outreach Training, which has been sponsored by EPA Region 6 Brownfields Program. And the session today is to learn about different types of grants and assistance available through the Brownfields Program, specifically targeting nonprofits and their partners. And our first speaker today is Sam Reynolds, who's a Brownfields Project Officer out of EPA Region 6. Sam, are you ready?
I am. Thanks, Jean. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
First of all, let me welcome everyone to the EPA Nonprofit Brownfields Grant seminar and webinar. We're going to actually be presenting today. I have with me, again, Kamisha Scott. Kamisha Scott has been with the agency since 1996. And she is also a project officer with the Brownfields program. Also, David Real, who will be another instructor, has been with the Corps of Engineers and Brownfields program employee for 7 years, and he's a geologist. He'll be talking about the targeted Brownfields part of it, assessment part of it. And also, Kamisha will be talking about the overview 101 part of Brownfields. My name is Sam Reynolds, and I've been with the agency for 5 years, and I'll be talking about the job training portion of the program. The reason we're putting on this particular webinar for you today is because we're finding out that nonprofit agencies are out there and are really not taking advantage of or have no idea what's out there for them to take advantage of in their communities. We have several Brownfields grants that are in your areas right now with money available to you, but I don't think you know it's out there. Secondly, I don't think you know the programs that we have here right now that could help you. Some of them are even free services that can provide you support in your communities to help rebuild those communities and make them into the communities you would like them to be. So therefore, we're going to go ahead and give you some instruction on that and help you find out exactly how we can help you. First, let me go over the agenda just a little bit and tell you what's going to be coming your way. Kamisha is going to follow me after these welcoming remarks with a Brownfields 101 presentation. And, again, it's going to cover basically what this program is about. And then David also will also be integrated into that particular presentation, and he'll talk about the targeted Brownfields assessment program that we have here at the EPA. And also we have Mr. Harold Letford, who has come in from the Community Renewal International program in Shreveport. And he's going to give you his ideas and views from a nonprofit's perspective, right where you live at. He's going to actually talk to you on the level that you would see things. He's been in every program that we've had here. He's had a part into it and knows it very well. So we thought it'd be great for him to bring him in so that you can actually see exactly how he's went through things and how he was able to manage and be successful in his nonprofit program. Again, this is a 2-hour presentation. And then I'll follow that up with the job training portion, which I think is, to me, is one of our better programs that we have here in the Brownfields program, and I'm hoping that some of you would think so also. And then at the end of the entire session, for 30 minutes, we're going to recap everything that we've talked about for 30 minutes. Now, I would like for you to hold all your questions, again, to the end of the seminar. If you have any questions as we're going about it, they're being streamed in. We have our co-worker, Lisa Rule, who's actually watching. Your questions come in, and she's going to be monitoring that the entire time. And those questions that are coming in, if we don't get to answer your questions today at the end of the session, then we're going to answer those questions for you within the next 72 hours. You'll receive every answer to your question. So don't be alarmed if we don't get to you today. Give us 72 hours, it'll be emailed to you. With that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Ms. Kamisha Scott, and she'll start off with the Brownfields 101 program.
Good afternoon. My name is Kamisha Scott Marshall, and first of all, I'd like to thank you for attending this seminar, and we hope that it'll be very beneficial for you. Next slide, please. I've been working on that. I just want to give you an idea. The purpose of this presentation is to provide an overview of the Brownfields program, specifically targeting your needs, the nonprofit community. The topics that we'll discuss include the definitions and examples, resources that are available to you, and program-specific criteria for you. Another reason, the reason why this got started is that myself, along with many of my colleagues, we were receiving tons of calls from the nonprofit community, and we felt there was a need. And it goes along to me with the law of reciprocity. Being a nonprofit, you constantly give to others, and now we want to return and give to you. It's like a cyclical effect, and we're here to give to those who give to others. Next slide. What are brownfields? What are brownfields? Let's find out. Let's get them. What's the purpose of brownfields, where it came from, what can brownfields do for you, the nonprofit community? Next slide, please. Brownfields, we had our Small Business Liability Relief and Revitalization Act formed in 2002, and what it does, it amends CERCLA, the Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act of 1980. The purpose of CERCLA was designed to clean up abandoned sites. What Brownfields, what we did was we amended that CERCLA law by providing grants to assess and clean up sites. And, yes, we have a free service that's going to be talked about with my co-worker who's going to, as Sam had mentioned earlier, integrate into are into this presentation, and it also means providing liability exemptions. What is a brownfield? The definition is real property, the expansion, redevelopment, or reuse of which may be complicated by the presence or potential presence of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant. Next slide, please. Can you believe there's an estimate of 500,000 brownfield sites nationwide? Nonprofits, we need you to participate. Next slide. Want an idea what brownfields looks like? Here you go, right in front of you. We have old abandoned gas stations, old abandoned buildings. Next slide. We have dump sites. Again, old, abandoned, used, or underused, or abandoned buildings. Next slide. And we have more brownfield sites. The bottom picture is what can be done from the top picture, what we can start off with and what we can end up with. Let's talk about the brownfield impact in a community. Next slide, please. The primary impacts are economic, social, and environmental. From economics, not only decreased property values and city tax revenues, you have limited job growth and reducing of surrounding property values. From a social perspective, you have increased urban sprawl and inner city blight, but also it blemishes the cultural uniqueness of that community. And from an environmental perspective, you have potential threats clearly to the human health and the environment. Next slide. Let's talk about the cycle. It's a simple cycle. It's a four-step cycle to improving your community. You identify and reuse the project. You assess, you clean up, and redevelop. Identify the project. Assess, clean up, and redevelop. And that's going to be discussed in further detail again with David. Again, identify, reuse the project, assess, clean up, and redevelop. Let's go further and talk about the resources that are available to you. Next slide, please. Available resources, next slide. The great thing about this program is, particularly for nonprofits, we have six avenues for you to get in. We have six avenues to get in, get assistance, but for that, four are eligible for nonprofits. We have assessment, we have cleanup, we have the revolving loan, we have state response, job training, and targeted brownfield assessments. Again, that's our free service. Of the six, you're eligible for four. The four are, you can have direct application for cleanup, you can request a targeted brownfield assessment, direct application for job training, and elements indirectly of the revolving loan grant. So that's a great avenue for you all to go down, four out of six. Next slide, please. Now let's find out who's eligible. Eligible applicants include, of course, you all, nonprofits, redevelopment agencies, COGS, states, cities, local governments, tribes. Those who are not eligible are those who are potentially liable parties or private owners or developers. The purpose of this slide is to show that this is definitely not a one-man show, and in order for it to be a success, partnership is essential. Partnership is the key. There'll be times when you need to be a partner and have someone partner with you, and then there'll be other times when they won't need you to partner with them. So keep in the back of your mind how important partnership is. And nonprofits can partner with local governments and cities, and you'll find that out further throughout our presentation. Next slide, please. What are some of our eligible contaminants? Mine scarred lands, illegal drug labs, such as meth labs, lead-based paint, petroleum products, hazardous substance, and asbestos. Those that are excluded are those that are on the national priorities list, facilities subject to circular order or decree, which we discussed earlier, and facilities that are subjected to the control of the federal government. Next slide, please. We're going to start getting into our programs that I had mentioned earlier about the four of the six that you're eligible to get. And the first is the Brownfield Job Training Grant. That is $200,000. Nonprofits clearly are eligible. It is for environmental training and assistance in obtaining employment in environmental fields. And again, partnership is essential. And as Sam, when he goes into his presentation, you'll see that. And also, you also see it with Dr. Lexon's presentation. Next slide, please. We'll talk about the next program that you're directly, job training as well as cleanup, you're directly eligible to apply for. And that is the Brownfield Cleanup Program. That is site-specific, and you can apply for hazardous substance or petroleum. Applicant cannot be potentially liable for contamination, and David will go in further detail with that. Clearly, nonprofits are eligible. Applicants may apply for funding up to three sites. Maximum funding per entity is $600,000. This is a three-year performance period, and this is the program that you're, again, eligible to directly apply for that has a 20% cost share. And after David gives you the specifics, from a technical perspective, and I'll come back and clarify the 20% cost share. But I want to just highlight a couple of things. partnership is just definitely essential in this, and think about that. And throughout the presentation, I'm sure you'll hear Sam, David, and myself speak about the importance of contacting EPA prior to, one, for clarification, and two, prior to applying for any of the grants. I'll pass it on to my co-worker, David.
To the next slide. My name is David Real, and as Sam and Kamisha indicated, I work with the Targeted Brownfields Assessment Program at Region 6. This is a program which provides free environmental site assessment services, and those services do include, or eligible applicants for those services do include nonprofits. And so we bring it up here at this time because if you are anticipating acquiring or applying for a cleanup grant, as Kamisha has just discussed with you, one of the requirements is that prior to your proposal submittal, you must have completed a phase one and a phase two environmental site assessment. The phase one has to be completed prior to your acquisition of the property, the phase two, prior to your application. And environmental assessments can be costly. We suggest on our slide here that, you know, with, combined with your phase one and phase two, there are many times you could be looking at $100,000 or more. How are you going to pay for this? Well, you could just up and fund it yourself. Or you may be able to secure free environmental assessment services, either from your local brownfields assessment grantee that may exist in your area, either a city or a council of governments that may have funds available. You may also get it from the state brownfields program. And then you can also acquire it from EPA Region 6 brownfields program through our targeted brownfield assessment program. Next slide, please. Now, the things that can be provided through the targeted brownfield assessment or the TBA program include inventories of the brownfields in a community. It can include phase one assessments, which are basically just reports that identify whether there might be a problem based upon the available public data and interviews and a site walkover. And then a phase two assessment, which is actually doing sample collection and analysis to determine whether there is an environmental problem or not and what the extent might be. Then we can also provide a cleanup planning, we call it cleanup plan activities here. It's sometimes referred to as a phase three, but it is basically a cleanup plan. Next slide, please. Now, if you're interested in acquiring a free environmental assessment through the TBA program does not require a great deal. You simply submit a request to EPA Region 6 to the Brownfield Section Chief, Monica Smith. We show her email address here. You can do it as easily as sending her an email. If you want to be more formal and send a letter, that's fine too. But then after Monica receives it, it'll be evaluated. The request will be evaluated. If it's approved, then the site assessment is performed for you. You end up with a site assessment report in your hand. EPA picks up the tab. Now, we do have a note here at the bottom is if there happens to be a local program, a brownfields program in your area, we will defer that request to the local program. We will also defer it to the state brownfields program if they would prefer to provide it. Next slide. I want to talk just a few minutes here about liability protection. This is a subject that always comes up, and in connection to contaminated properties or brownfields properties, even though it may or may not be contaminated, but perceived to be. In order to have liability protection when you acquire a property, and when we say acquire, it's not just purchasing that if it is gifted to you. Before you take possession, you need to do all appropriate inquiry. In most cases, all appropriate inquiry will equate to a phase one environmental site assessment. Now, when you do this inquiry, say before you purchase the property, and you get the results back, it'll either find no indication of contamination, or it will find that contamination is detected. If contamination is not detected, and you go ahead and purchase that property, but at some time later there is discovered to be contamination on that property, then you would qualify as an innocent landowner, or if it was being caused by contamination coming on from adjacent properties, you'd be classified as a contiguous property owner, but would be awarded, would be given liability protection because you had done that phase one, all appropriate inquiry before you purchased the property. On the other hand, if you did your phase one before the purchase and it said that there was contamination detected, you can go ahead and purchase that property knowing that it has some level of contamination, but you have liability protection as what is referred to as a bona fide prospective purchaser. All right. Then you go ahead and you purchase the property. Next slide. I just talked a little bit more about this all appropriate inquiry, the phase one environmental assessment. This is the process of evaluating the property for environmental contamination and assessing the potential liability for the contamination that's present at the site. This involves some sleuthing, as indicated by the little Sherlock Holmes looking character down there on the left. And in doing the phase one, you examine all of the available public data that is out there. You talk to people, do interviews, you walk over the property, and then the environmental consultant will turn out a report that will indicate whether there may be the likelihood of contamination at the property or whether they see no indication of any contamination at this property. Next slide. When should you do your phase one? Well, we've kind of already talked about it a little bit, but this will even emphasize a little bit more. Before you acquire the property. If you do it after you acquire the property, you lose the liability protections. You also make yourself unqualified to apply for a cleanup grant. Very important. You do that phase one before you acquire the property. Phase one that you conduct has to be current. It has to be current or updated if it's within 1 year prior. In 1 year prior to acquisition. There are parts of the phase one that actually have to be updated if they are over 180 days old. So you need to be aware of this and be sure that you have an updated phase one in place when you acquire a property. Now, I'll now turn the presentation back over to Ms. Kamisha Scott.
Thank you, David. Next slide, please. Let's talk about brownfields benefits. Let's talk about dollars. That makes sense. Next slide, please. What are the benefits of brownfields? Clearly, they revitalize the community. They create jobs and local revenue, remove blight, protect the environment. But can you believe that each dollar invested in brownfields funding leverages $2.50 in redevelopment? That's something to raise a brow at. Next slide, please. I mentioned earlier about cost share and in particular, because you have to have a match for the cleanup program. We're going to talk about cost share, the 20% match that you have to have. Next slide, please. Again, cost share of 20% is required for the brownfield cleanup only. Not TBA, not job training, but brownfield cleanup only. A hardship waiver is available for the match. Cost share is connected to the environmental cleanup, and the grant recipient, you will contribute cash or in-kind resources for the cleanup cost share. And again, we stress, please, before you get started applying or any questions that you may have, contact the Brownfield team via Supervisor Monica Smith, and she'll direct the call appropriately to get you the correct information before you get started. Next slide, please. We're going to talk about criteria that is applicable to nonprofits. We're going to talk about guidance and resources. Next slide, please. There are three that we like to note for you to take pay a particular attention to. That's the regulations 40 CFR 30 Part 23, which is open to the public, that's regarding cost share and matching. Our national proposal guidelines, which that's what you're going to use to assist you in writing your proposal, and the cost principles, OMB's cost principles, that deal specifically with nonprofits. Next slide, please. You're going to ask yourself, what determines an eligible cost share, that 20%, what is eligible? We're going to discuss it has to be reasonable, meaning fair, proper and sound, allocable, cost that can be charged to one or more activities on the basis received. Is it necessary? Not prohibited, not federal, unless the federal program has provisions to allow that. Not other federal cost shares allowed. Is it verifiable? Can you document it? And is it within the budget? Next slide, please. What are eligible cost share resources? Clearly cash, non-federal grants, labor, material, supplies, and services. And again, before you apply or are interested in applying, for clarification, given the regulation, but for clarification, please contact Region 6 EPA Brownfields Project Team. And next slide, we're going to recap presentation and give you some highlights. What is a brownfield? It's a real property with actual or perceived contaminants. What are the impacts from a social, economic, and environmental? Social is a cultural impact on the community, economic, job loss, environmental, clearly health and human impact. What's the project cycle? Four steps, four simple, easy steps. Identify, assess, clean up, and redevelop it. Who's eligible for, what programs are eligible for nonprofits? Primarily that you can directly apply for job training, cleanup, TBA, and elements indirectly, and Sam Reynolds is going to go into a little detail about that, the revolving loan program. Types of contaminants, lead-based paint, hazardous petroleum, asbestos, mine scarlands, meth, illegal drug labs. Again, we recapped and talked about the 20% match. Cost share is not from the grant. That is something that the applicant must provide. We encourage you to remember to refer to the regulations or EPA Region 6 Brownfield Team for clarification. And the cost eligibility, I'd just like to highlight, make sure that it's reasonable and allocable. And that is, we'll have one more slide, next slide. Let's talk about the grant competition. When do we normally have it? We expect our guidelines to be posted August this year, 2010, and there's a website. Proposals are due in October sometime. Selection is generally spring of the next year, and we will do awards the summer of next year as well. Any questions that you have, please contact our supervisor, Monica Smith, 214-665-6780 or via email, smith.monica@epa.gov. And you have, if you need a 1-800 number, it's 800-533-3580, and that's for the Brownfield team. Thank you. We'll then turn over to Dr. Lexley.
Hello. I'm delighted to be here this afternoon and to share from a nonprofit perspective just our story. And I'll try to do it in such a way it will be helpful to you and answer some questions, because sometimes as a nonprofit you live it and you're saying, what do I do today? Who do I call? What do I leverage? How do I do it? And those sorts of things. But I thought maybe I would share just a little bit about who we are in our organization. If you'll just kind of go with me, I'll kind of look at you and we'll do it. Who are we? And the next one. We are Community Renewal International. We started out as Freeport Bossier Community Renewal. Okay, next slide, if you will. All right. I'm learning how to do to communicate this. If we could go to the next slide, it's Community Renewal International, and we're a nonprofit. Our whole idea is to bring community renewal into communities, and we do that in such a way that what we're trying to do is empower, restore the neighborhoods through caring relationships through all of our folks. And so we work at it that sort of way. Next slide, please. Our founder was Mac McCarter in Shreveport. He's been he's well recognized in the community renewal field. And we have three basic models I'll share very quickly. The renewal team is for a whole city. It's renewing a whole city, working together as teams and looking at empowerment and how we work together. Haven House is neighborhood training programs where we're in the neighborhood working with people. Then we have our most special program, and that is our Friendship House, or our internal care unit, where we actually move into a community with our staff, and we begin to work in that community. You can see in this slide one of the houses we've built. We've built seven at this particular point. Next slide, please. Our situation, and next slide. We were donated this building in downtown Shreveport. And we were donated this building so that we could disseminate the CRI model. We were having a lot of people come from all over the country, all across Region 6, all across EPA and HUD and every place to look. And so we wanted to begin to set up a training program to help the people, other cities, become a catalyst for the renewal of sustainable design. We decided that we wanted to work on economic development in downtown Shreveport. Next slide, please. We set up our National Center for Community Renewal, which was our building. We set up outcomes. As we set these outcomes up, it was very important guideposts for what we wanted to do. We wanted to look at new industry of social technology, dissemination of a working model, training and support, academic certification, and you can read a curriculum, on-site and distance learning, research, and working with communities. Next slide, please. We decided to build green in our donated building, and this is just some of the reasons. The United States, that 36% of all the total energy use, and that's what buildings and electric consumption. So we wanted to be a model for not only the renewal of neighborhoods, but we wanted to be a renewal model for green and green technologies. So if we could go to the next slide, please. Our plan and how we carried it out. Well, I have to back up and just say to you just a little bit of our next slide, please, sir. And then as we go to here, you can begin to see we had a phase one. We spent a lot of time developing a plan. And as we developed that plan, we learned a great deal because we were able to work with some really great people. We knew our building was full of asbestos, 16 stories of asbestos, old office building that hadn't been used in 18 years. And so we began to look, and at that time we were getting introduced to the Brownfield coordinator in Shreveport, Robert McMullen. And as we got introduced to Robert McMullen, he in turn introduced us to Region 6, and Region 6 became our buddies and our partners and our folks, our go-to people. And the people, and I guess what I want to say to you all, as a nonprofit, we kind of had a plan, but they were able to help and direct our plan and tell us what different things we wanted to do. We knew that we had to get rid of that asbestos or the building would not ever work. We had to do that. Well, as the gentleman said earlier, and I'm going to spend a few minutes on this, we began a phase one assessment. And we had talked to EPA at that time about a cleanup grant, and we wrote a cleanup grant. And unfortunately, the first year, it was not funded in that particular part. But we didn't get disheartened because we had a lot of folks saying, don't quit, don't quit, don't quit. Amber, I can see Amber, and the folks in Louisiana, Dwayne and Roger and Robert McMullen, and the different people at EPA said, don't quit. And we found out that our community plan wasn't very well written. It wasn't clear. And our budget wasn't as clear as it should have been. So we wrote a second cleanup grant, and we were able to get that second cleanup grant. But in the meantime, some things had happened in Louisiana that were very critical. We had a huge hurricane come through Louisiana that wiped out New Orleans and South Louisiana called Katrina. I'm sure all of you have heard about it and probably are hearing more about it today because of the other tragedy that's going on into the Gulf right now. And when we did, we realized that what we had to do was to clean the asbestos up. And because of our relationship with HUD in the communities, all of a sudden we had EPA and HUD working close together with us, giving us advice and all of that. So we were able to use the HUD funds and EPA funds to do the assessment of a phase one and phase two. For our nonprofit, which is not a very wealthy nonprofit. If both of you are out there, you know that your nonprofits aren't as wealthy. But what we were able to do is we had a lot of Katrina evacuees. So they were moving to Shreveport. And we had the idea, let's put these people to work. We worked with Southern University, who had a training grant with the city of Shreveport, and it was outstanding. They ran over and they were so easy to work with. And EPA came over, Region 6 again, and came over and met with us, and we did a lot of planning with our local city. And so all of a sudden, we had a job training program. That job training program was for people that were Katrina evacuees. And if you read their resumes, you would probably not think that they could do what they accomplished. And I'm trying to point out something to you. As we began to see that we could work with this training grant, there were poverty guideline folks, there were Katrina evacuees, there were people from our neighborhoods who all applied and went to work for us. And they went to work as environmental specialists because of the training program at Southern University. We could have never done it without that. We had the cleanup grant. At that time, it was funded. We made such a production of that. It was on TV. The check that you all gave us and downtown Baton Rouge was real big, and we walked around downtown with it, with holding it up so everybody could see it, and they took pictures of it. You may think that's silly, but we loved it. We loved the idea of having people to work with. And so as we worked with, and this, we began a cleanup project. We were able to set up a rate based on the Bacon-Davis Act of paying the folks, and we had supervisors, and here we had people who had never had a job actually coming in and cleaning up a 16-story building, and they got it done. And so I will try not to spend too much time, but as we did, it took about 11 months, and those folks cleaned the building out. And today I can tell you, because of the cleanup grant, because of the training grant, because of the assessment, we were able to have a clean building ready to move forward in that particular area. We're in phase two right now. In phase two, what we're doing is we're doing a lot of planning, and I'll mention some of that in just a little bit. We're into our design. In phase three, we're raising money. And you, at some point in the near future, you'll be able to see a brand new green building in downtown Shreveport. And a lot of that began with a building was full of asbestos and EPA. All right, next. Yeah, just next slide. Our next slide, let's just go to it. Our next one. These are just some things that we did as a nonprofit that I really advise any nonprofit listening to really spend time doing. We attended the annual Region 6 EPA Brownfield Partners Team. Amber did the grant workshop. That we went there and learned a great deal at that workshop. We attended all of the EPA Brownfield workshops that were put on by the state of Louisiana. We communicated extensively with our brownfield coordinator, and I really hope you'll get to know your brownfield coordinator in whatever city you are and whatever that you're working with, because they can be a great conduit and a great help. We had the phase two assessment project working with HUD. We used the environmental consultants to work with us, and we utilized the brownfield training program, as I said earlier, with the city of Shreveport and Southern University. So those were some of the things we did. We did a lot more of calling and leveraging, but I'll point that out as we go. Next slide, please, sir. How we used outside funds to support phase one, which was the abatement process. We'll go to the next slide. These are all of the funding sources that we leveraged. And I want to emphasize that because of something Kamisha said that sort of rung a bell for me. We got the funds, but we leveraged them with other funds. And if you can see at the top, you'll see that we had HUD. We had two HUD congressional things, and they were through the EDI program there at HUD. If you notice, we had the cleanup grant from EPA. We had the training grant from EPA. We now have a $500,000 revolving loan that we have paid back $300,000 so far. We are very, very excited about that because the building was clean and because of the people that we had that cleaned that building out who are working today, we were able to talk to our city fathers, our local people, and say, this is what we've had. And so they're helping us pay this loan back through our nonprofit and doing that. And it really, really worked. It is a great way to leverage that. The Downtown Development Authority, which is in a lot of cities across the United States, we went to Little Rock, we went to Syracuse, we went to other places to see what other cities have done. And many of those have downtown development authorities who are changing the downtown areas of cities in America from a blighted area to a productive, vibrant area, and ours is doing that. So they gave us $30,000, and half of that went for parking meters, The other half went for permits to do our cleanup, and the other went for landfill, because what we try to do is keep as much of the stuff out of the building as possible that we can use later. We had a local bank that got involved with us that gave us $750,000, which we have paid back in that process. And if I can look and see that other one just for... we had private donors that gave us $350,000 in that process. Our nonprofit, if I've said anything that made any sense to you all, we're a social agency. Our desire is to care about people and the neighborhoods and that sort of thing. And so as we do that, we are able to do that. We promised our city we would raise all of the money for this building outside the city of Shreveport, and we've done that. So most of the funders that we're doing are coming from also outside the city of Shreveport. So that just gives you an idea of how we used all of the funds together, how we leveraged them. And what I found was, in working with EPA Region 6, was they encouraged us to leverage. They gave us opportunities into who to call and to work with us. And we had to do an environmental special thing for HUD, because it was the city of Shreveport and we were working with the community development thing. So when we did that, they gave us a phase one. That's how we got into it, because we had to do a phase one. And we really tried to follow the regulations, which may sometimes seem ominous to you and the nonprofits that are out there right now. But one of the things I want to tell you is I spent a lot of time, our staff spent a lot of time talking to our Brownfield people, to our Region 6 people, and understanding what was needed so that we could give them back what they needed to hear from us. Next slide, please. Results to date. That's an important thing to us. Every step we take needs to go forward, not back. Next slide, please. I could have included a lot more of these kind of slides, but the guys you see there and the suits are all guys that were trained by Southern. Everybody there. They trained 44 people. We actually wound up with 24 on the last day of the job. Of those 24, 18 are fully employed right now from Fort Worth to New Orleans. Many of them are on the Gulf Coast right now, helping with the cleanup, but not picking up trash on the beach, but as environmental specialists with a certificate. And what I have, I've had an opportunity, and many of you in the nonprofits and that have had an opportunity to see people succeed and lights go on. But when we saw those guys working and we gave them certificates, it was like a family that is continuing. They always asking us, have you built a building yet? Can we come back? Can we see it? And so we did all of that. These numbers may not mean very much to you, but those are very large numbers for people who have never had a job before. In fact, the guy who wound up as the supervisor was sleeping under the bridge in Shreveport, homeless. He was not allowed to go home or any of those kind of things. He went through our training program, and he wound up being the main supervisor on the last month of the job. Now he's back with his family. So does renewal work? Yes, it does. Renewal for our building, renewal for our community, that's our whole concept. Next slide, please, sir. Next steps. Next slide, please. Our vision is to build this building in downtown Shreveport, a housing, training facilities, technical support. Next slide, please. This is our plan. We follow it to the letter. We don't just sit down and hope. We believe that any time you have a good plan, you can operate it, and you can work it, and you can communicate it. And we've had some great help from a lot of great organizations, all the way from Hewlett-Packard to Cisco and Johnson Controls and Siemens, Train Energy. They've all been in there to help us come up with this plan, which is energy production. We'll produce our own energy through solar and wind. An entire environment, which will be very healthy and safe, and many of you hope will get to see it. Individual work and living environments, building operation and maintenance. That right now in green building is 35% of the energy savings in building. I won't spend a lot of time showing you these slides because many of you know these, but this was the goal we set. And because of EPA, because of our continued work and leverage and working together, we are at this point, and we are raising our money to build this particular building. Next slide, please, sir. We're going to have, these are the kind of things you're going to see when you come see our building, rooftop gardens, rain, water capture and recycling. I grew up in rural Louisiana. We had cisterns all the time. Recycled building materials. And a lot of those things that you see, that you'll be able to see in our building. Next slide, please, sir.
How do you put it on?
Next slide. Here we go. Right now, our funding formula, we have found that what we're doing is we have donations and partnerships with corporations, which are providing us about 20%. Grants from private corporations and individuals, and there are a number of those places, once your building is clean, that you become eligible for those grants from the Kresge, Sloan, all of those are available for that, for nonprofits. Government funding, which is about 10% in grants in those particular areas, grants from foundations, and then the last, which we have discovered, and we discovered it through EPA workshops, tax credits. And if you haven't explored tax credits as a nonprofit, nonprofits are really super in getting tax credits. And tax credits can be utilized to raise lots of money for that. Next slide, please, sir. We have we've completed, replicated our model in Abilene, in Minnesota, New Orleans, in Cameroon, Africa, and next slide, please, sir. Our trainings we hold in Shreveport on a regular basis, individuals from over 50 cities, three countries, and including 38 cities from Region 6 have been to training, actual on-site training in Shreveport, and we're able to deliver some of the message that I'm trying to deliver today. We've spent a lot of time developing the curriculum that will be taught. We've done a lot of evaluations. We've had over 3,000 people tour our buildings and all of those particular areas. Next slide, please. I want to say thank you for letting me come today. I hope that if I've made any sense to you at all, that my message has been that you have a great partner in EPA. You have a great partner in Brownfield, and I would suggest that you become their very best friend. Because they want to be your friend, they'll help you. Now, some of them will smile and say to me, wait, Harold, but I will tell you, we've had great relationships. What I want you to see at this end is just a virtual tour. It'll take about 4 or 5 minutes for you to see what our plan is in this particular building. You go ahead. Thank you.
Community Renewal International is changing the world by systematically renewing the relational foundation of communities. In response to interest in this replicable social technology, CRI will construct the National Center for Community Renewal, a 260,000 square foot net zero green building located in downtown historic district of Shreveport, Louisiana, the community that is the learning laboratory for CRI's work. A new workforce will emerge from the training that occurs here. The learning process begins when we arrive at the National Center. As we enter the building, to the left of the elevator wall are videos showing what's going on around the world with community renewal, and also the information about the green technologies in the building. The ground floor functions as a town center for meetings and exchanging knowledge. The skylighted atrium is used as a solar chimney to generate power. To the left is the restored petroleum tower for 273 guest rooms. To the right is a new building for the Institute for Community Renewal and its training facilities. Stairs and elevators are located in the atrium between the two buildings. A roof plaza for outdoor gatherings is located at the 7th floor level above the new Institute for Community Renewal. Below the new building are wells for geothermal heating and cooling systems. An outdoor chapel is designed as a dependent structure as a place to reflect on the training experience. The plaza includes a hanging garden, which incorporates green roof technologies. Also, exercise facilities are located here. Rainwater will be captured and reused in the building. As we come back into the atrium and cross the bridge to the petroleum tower, learning and collaboration will occur formally through hands-on training and informally throughout the building. As we go by the elevators and into the petroleum tower, we find that this building is a narrow floor plate, short column spans, low floor floors, and is more suitable to house. Rooms on each floor are organized around two shared living spaces. Board discussions and conversations around the kitchen table are part of the training process that occurs in these living areas. Bedrooms are designed to be small and comfortable. There are no TVs to encourage interaction in this family area, almost a front porch area. Each cluster symbolically functions as a neighborhood learning community. This cluster and 273 rooms. All the neighborhoods gather in larger training facilities of the Institute across the atrium. The materials, selection, indoor air quality, lighting technology, gray water systems are all part of the green building features of the National As we turn to go back into the atrium, we'll see that the space is used not only for daylighting of the petroleum tower rooms that look into the atrium, but also the window walls provide photovoltaic solar collectors in a film that's applied in the glazing system. This is part of a hybrid system to generate power through solar, geothermal, and wind. At the top of the atrium is a chapel. This is a spiritual learning process. The building is a symbol of renewal in both form and function. Learning from the past, symbolized by the petroleum tower restoration, designed by a famous architect, Dallas architect, Bryant Hendrick, in 1957, and then our acting on the present to change the world, symbolized by the new Institute building. And expecting a better future, to quote Daniel Burnham, aiming high in hope and work, symbolized by the atrium form. It will add to the street value of what goes on downtown, more entries and sidewalks. It represents one hope, one dream, one community as reflected in the band that goes around the building. The petroleum tower was a brownfield site filled with asbestos, and through the assistance of local, state, and federal agencies, monies were provided and is now ready for renovation. The location downtown will be served by public transportation, bicycle facilities, and it truly is a remarkable project in a remarkable place.
All right.
right, that was Mr. Ledford's YouTube presentation, and also his presentation on the renewal project that he has in Shreveport. And now my name is Sam Reynolds. I'm going to go ahead and move into the job training portion. But before I do that, next slide.
Sam, this is Jean. Just before you do that, for those of you who may have followed the hyperlink in the slides to the YouTube video and played it back locally, you may have to use your back button one or two clicks to get you back into the PowerPoint presentation. And if you want to jump to the point they're at now, you want to jump to slide number 60. Thank you.
All right, everyone. We're on slide number 60 right now. Okay, and basically, I'm going to talk about what is called the Workforce Development and Job Training Program, which has just been changed for this year. Last year, it was just the Job Training Program, Brownfield Job Training Program, but now it has changed into the Workforce Development and Job Training Program. The reason being is because we're trying to bring other programs outside of the Brownfields program into the realm of this program, i.e. like solid waste, water, those types of things into the program. So now we've kind of expanded so more people can have jobs using the grant money that we're issuing out to entities today. So therefore, we've broadened the perspective of the program. Next slide. All right, I want to talk about when and why the job training program was established. Okay, the program was established in the early 1990s, and basically it was established by EPA staff when they noticed that there were environmental contaminated sites out there that were being cleaned up in communities, but the people that were coming to clean up those sites in those communities were coming elsewhere. They were coming from other parts of the city or the state to work in those communities where the contamination was. So the EPA said, well, wait a minute. We want the people directly involved and living in those communities to clean up the sites and get the benefits of the jobs that are becoming available from those contaminated sites. So therefore, they established the job training program. Next slide. All right, the process and the statistics. I want to talk about that for a moment. The EPA awards competitive grants to develop environmental cleanup and health and safety training programs for unemployed and underemployed, predominantly low-income and minority residents of brownfields-impacted communities. And to date, the EPA has funded 169 brownfields job training grants, totaling over $35 million. And as of June 2010, more than 5,800 people have completed training, and over 3,800 have obtained employment in the environmental field with an average starting hourly wage of $14.65. So just like Harold was stating in his presentation about Shreveport and their job training program, how someone can be sleeping under a bridge one moment and at the next moment, after graduating this program, making $14.65 with an environmental job and license to go out and work cleaning up sites in your community and elsewhere. That's a big jump. That's why we love this program. Next slide. All right, and also, as a nonprofit, you are eligible for this program, and we encourage you to partner with a local educational institution. Because the educational institution can be responsible for helping establish and implementing your curriculum and also providing the necessary instructors required for your job training program. So it's a lot to take on by yourself as a nonprofit. You may say, I don't have the monies, I don't have that. But if you partner with a educational institution, they do have those things. And so you guys can come together as one for the better of the community and training your students under your program. Next slide. All right, the community benefits. We've talked about cost share in several different programs. Well, guess what? There is no cost share in this program. You have no cost share in this program as a nonprofit. And it promotes your community's goals of sustainable land and reuse and environmental protection through cleanup and site contamination and sustainable redevelopment of brownfields. Again, if you got brownfields in your community, old mom-and-pop gas stations, asbestos, lead-based paint in some of those older buildings out there, well, guess what? Those students that graduate from your job training program will be working right there in your community to help clean, assess those buildings up and help making your community a better place to live. Next slide. All right. And also, this program right here promotes partnerships. Again, I just stated that you have to, well, you don't have to, but we suggest that you partner with an educational institution. It also brings private investors. It also brings employers out that want to try to help you. And guess what? You guys start establishing bonds and working on other projects outside of just a job training program in the near future to help better your community. So people you didn't know, agencies you didn't know, through this program, you get to know them. You get to work together for one common cause, which, again, makes you more self-sufficient in the future in bettering your community. Next slide. Okay. We award 12 to 13 brownfield job training grants each year, and the maximum value of each grant is $200,000. And the statistics, if you should happen to fail after you put your first proposal in through the competitive process, well, there's a 90% chance that you're going to pass the second time around. Okay? So it's a very good program. If you was to put your proposal in this year and then make it, well, guess what? You got a 90% chance of next year of being selected. And none of our other programs have a percentage that high of being selected for a grant. So I suggest that is one big benefit to you. Again, no cost share also. Next slide. We are moving to slide 67 for the question that's out there. All right. The type of jobs obtained after graduation. Again, going back to Harold's indication of someone sleeping on the street under a bridge, now has a job as an environmental technician, air quality technician, emergency response technician, energy conservation specialist, GIS technician, forklift operator, health and safety technician, biotech technician, sampling, calibration analysis technician, wastewater, etc. So, again, very good jobs obtained through this program, from nothing to a whole lot of something after you graduate this program. Next slide. Okay, these are changes for this year. As you look at this slide where it says required core curriculum, for all the previous years, the only thing that we required you to have in your curriculum was the Occupational Safe and Healthy Administration Hazardous Waste Operation and Emergency Response HAZWOPA program. But now, this year, we have added a few more based upon the expansion of the program. Now you're going to have in your curriculum lead and renovation, repair and paint, underground storage tank leak prevention, solid waste management or cleanup of related training sites that could be landfills, demolition and debris collection, and also green technologies. Again, solar installation, remediation technology, phytoremediation, and soil amendments. These different types of work have been also added to your curriculum for this year. Again, we only had one last year, HAZWOPA. This year we've added four more due to the expansion of the program. So therefore, your instructor is going to have to be more broad than any year that we've had before. But the reason for this is because we want your graduates to come out and be able to obtain jobs that are out there and needed at this particular time in the United States. Next slide. Okay. Now, non-required training that is also being used is mold remediation, energy auditing, weatherization, heavy machinery operations, industrial and oil field response, native plant revegetation, low impact development, and green building design. Again, you don't have to put this in your curriculum, but again, we have, just like down here right now, weatherization, we have in New Orleans, job training program that took on weatherization and did great jobs for their community, going in, putting in radiant barriers in their attics and insulation around their pipes and things of that nature, doors, and which is very appreciated by the community. At the same time, those students are learning how to do that where they can actually go out and obtain jobs and become proficient at that, which is something that's well needed in this day and time in our environment. Next slide. All right, now I have some examples of some different agencies out there who have done well, very well as a matter of fact. First one is success story on the L.A. Conservation Corps, Los Angeles Conservation Corps. They teamed with a local trade college and a nonprofit organization and trained students in renewable energy such as solar power and weatherization, what I just talked about. And they completed 5 training sessions and graduated over 175 students. And guess what? Out of those 175 students, they had an 85% placement rate. Outstanding. Next slide. Okay, this one here is another success story on JFY Networks in Boston, Massachusetts. It was an EPA training program. And it provided 3 types of environmental training, which were clean up, renewable energy, and weatherization. And to date, it has produced 330 graduates, 80 to 90% placement rate, with an average entry-level job which pays $27,000 per year. So again, average. So you got some that pay even more than that. And again, going from sleeping under a bridge to making that type of money. That's great. Next slide. All right, here's King County in Seattle, Washington. This job training program provided 238 hours of curriculum, which included Hazwoper and bioremediation. Again, it graduated over 260 students, of whom 183 have been placed in jobs, with wages ranging from $12 to $35 per hour. Next slide. And here we have Southern University again. This is Harold Ledford's job training program that he was talking about earlier. And they have 2 training programs to date that they have been awarded and have conducted several 8-week courses over a 4-year period and have graduated 68 students and placed 50 in environmental jobs. Next slide. Okay, I have Goodwill Industries in New Orleans. Goodwill received a job training grant in 2008, and Goodwill trained over 50 students in environmental skills, including Hazwoper and weatherization. As you can see, if you can make it out, there's a guy working in an attic, and he's actually installing a radiant barrier for Goodwill at this particular time on this picture. Goodwill graduated 46 students and placed 39 students in environmental jobs to date. Next slide. We just awarded a job training grant this year. Now, I'm going to tell you, there were over 50 applicants this year, and Region 6 awarded a job training grant this year, and this particular agency ranked number 3 out of all of those applications. They are Limitless Vistas of New Orleans. I just put a picture and a wording up there of the Associated Press announcement that particularly this particular year. And again, they plan to train 40 students this year, with a goal of replacing at least 80% of environmental jobs. And it's probably going to be even greater than that now due to the BP oil spill out there. They're going to probably have a higher placement rate once these students graduate because there will be work for them in environmental along the coastline. Next slide. The press is great with this particular job. The press is outstanding because just like Harold was talking about him walking down the middle of the city with his check in his hand so that all the world can see. Well, guess what? We had the EPA administrator, the highest person in the EPA, come out and deliver this particular award for this particular agency this particular day, along with the mayor. Two mayors, because one was coming in and one was going out. So, and then there was a tremendous press corps. It was in the news. It was in newspapers, magazines. It was on the internet. It was everywhere. And now, just with that publicity alone, Limitless Vistas has had many offers of leveraging to help support their program for the rest of their time having this money. So those type of things go along with the job training program, and it's very beneficial for you as a nonprofit to take this particular program on. Next slide. All right. I'm just giving you some resources here where you can actually go and get more information about the program. So take that in consideration. Check out the resources. And educate yourself on those things. Next slide. Okay, there will be another webinar call on the 31st of August. I'm just letting you guys know right out front right now. And it will probably cover the same things that we have covered today. But I'm letting you know there will be another one for more information, and also the details will follow in the near future. October 1st, for job training, there will be proposals, will be requests for proposals released at that particular time. So you will be giving your job training instructions for proposals on October 1st if you plan on coming in this year. January 14th, 2011, your proposals will be due. You'll have approximately 80 to 90 days to write a good proposal and get it back up to us. Around April 2011, the awards will be announced, and mid-spring 2011, the awards will be funded. Next slide. If you're interested in this program, I'm one of the Brownfields project officers who work the job training program here in Region 6. Again, my name is Sam Reynolds, EPA, Region 6, Brownfields team, phone number 214-665-6682, and you can reach me by email at reynolds.samuel@epa.gov. Also, I work this along with Amber Perry, who's also a project officer with the Region 16. And her number is 214-665-3172. And our email address is Perry, P-E-R-R-Y, dot Amber, A-M-B-E-R, at EPA.gov. We would like you to contact us if you are interested in applying as a nonprofit. We really look forward to working with you. Next slide. All right, now I want to move on out of job training and talk about some of the things that we've talked about today. First thing being, as a nonprofit and RLF, as a nonprofit and RLF, there has got to be some EPA program, RLF program in your area right now that you probably are unaware of. And that RLF program, first of all, is called the Revolving Loan Fund Program. And the reason it's called the Revolving Loan Fund Program is because the money that we give to a recipient or a grantee is actually managed by them to be either subgranted or loaned out to the community agencies in the community for cleanup purposes. And as a nonprofit, you are eligible for a subgrant. A subgrant being they can actually give you the money to actually go out and clean up some area of your choice if you qualify, if you're not the responsible party and things of that nature, which David talked about earlier. And they can also loan you the money, and if they loan you the money, you're talking about a cost share now of 20%. But if that agency decides they want to waive their cost share, they have the right to do so. So that's one set of monies that are out there for you under the revolving loan program that may be in your area that you may not know about. The second one is, and David touched on that real well about the Targeted Brownfields Association, assessment program that we have. And there's a lot of money out there, free money, that's just waiting on you to come in and do an assessment with. Now, one thing about the Targeted Brownfields assessment money is that the money has to go through your state first, because your state has the first right of refusal before you can actually come through the EPA to get some assessment money from us to go out and do everything. I mean, it's a wide spectrum of things that we can actually do for you, all the way from inventorying, finding sites for you that may be contaminated, and then going out and saying, okay, this is where your sites are. And then also assessing those sites. Again, he talked about phase one, administrative side, and then phase two, actually hands-on sampling to find out what you have on those sites. Now, and then the third thing is, he can also, under the TBA program, you can also have us come out and do cleanup planning. So if you're trying to get a cleanup grant as a nonprofit and you're coming in for a cleanup grant, well, guess what? We have already done the inventory for you. We've already done the assessment for you. We have already done the cleanup planning for you. The only thing you got to do at this particular point is write the proposal, get the cleanup grant, and clean it up. So that's what we have available for you as a nonprofit under our Targeted Brownfields Assessment Program. So these things are free. You have no money coming out of your pocket for what I just talked about. So we're asking you to take advantage of that. We're asking you to move forward and get this money so that you can better your communities with the free service that we're providing here. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Kamisha Scott, and she's going to talk about and recap the Brownfields 101 overview.
First of all, I'd like to give many, 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 many thanks to Dr. Ledford for coming and giving his time and his experience with Region 6 and the Brownfields program. Secondly, I'd like to add to that we're going to do a YouTube interview of Kevin everything that he discussed. And for further information, you can refer to our YouTube interview, which hopefully will be, as Sam stated earlier, within 72 hours. If you could mute your line, please.
You just hit star 6 to keep the phone lines on mute to help cut out on that background noise. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I'd like to reiterate, please contact EPA Brownfields team before you begin to start. I mean, it is essential. We want to make sure that the process is done correctly and that you are competitive. You are competing nationwide, so please contact the Brownfields team before you start. I also like to add that both Dr. Ledford, Sam, David, everyone spoke about leveraging. This is seed money. We'd like to encourage you to think of that as such and recap that leveraging and partnership is essential. We talked about in the Brownfields 101, we talked about what is a brownfield, a real property with perceivable actual contamination that we can assist you with. What are the impacts, the social impacts, the economic impacts, and the environmental impacts? The project cycle, it's four steps in that project cycle. Identifying the site, assessing, cleanup, and redevelopment. Again, eligible properties that are eligible for nonprofits, job training, cleanup, TBAs, targeted brownfield assessments, and elements, indirectly elements of the revolving loan fund. Again, job training directly, cleanup directly, TBA assessment, and elements of the revolving loan fund. The type of contaminants we discussed earlier, lead-based paint, hazardous and petroleum, asbestos, mine-scarred lands, and illegal drug labs such as meth. I'll reiterate, the cleanup requires 20% match, not job training. The cleanup requires 20% match. The cost share is not from the grant. That is provided by the grantee. We, again, encourage you to refer to the regulations or EPA Region 6 for clarification. We discuss cost eligibility, the reasonableness, fair, proper, and sound, and how allocable it is. Can the cost be charged to one or more activities on the basis received? What's due for the cleanup grant? The schedule is as follows. We expect the guidelines to be posted August of this year. Proposals will be due October of this year. Selections will be announced spring of 2011 and awards summer 2011. Questions can be referred to our supervisor, Monica Smith, at 214-665-6780. That's 214-665-6780. Or via email, smith.monica@epa.gov. Or the toll-free 1-800 number, 1-800-533-3508. That's 1-800-533-3508. Referring to the TBA again, if you have any questions, there is no timetable on the targeted brownfields assessment. Just send an email to Monica. And again, I can't encourage you enough to please contact EPA Region 6 before you get started. And we'll open for questions. We have three questions.
There were a number that came in online, and I don't know, Lisa, did you want to handle those, or would you like me to walk through those?
Yeah. Hi, this is Lisa Rule. I'm a project officer. I can quickly answer what I've been looking at. The first question that came in is from the Planning and Development District. The question is, the Planning and Development District that I work for is interested in applying for brownfields grants to assess and discover the brownfields in our 6-county area. Is this eligible, or is there funding available for this activity, or do sites need to be predetermined? So I'm going to essentially guess that this Planning and Development District is not a nonprofit. So to answer your question, mostly what we've talked about today is what's out there for nonprofits. And the brownfields funding that Kamisha just talked about, the proposals that the guidelines are coming out in August, we do have additional funding for government entities. And, yes, we have assessment funds, cleanup funds, and the revolving loan fund. So that's to answer this government entity's question is, yes, we do have assessment funds available for you. Nonprofits are not eligible for the assessment funding, so we didn't really touch on this that much today.
Okay, Ken, sorry about that.
This planning district, I think that Amber Perry will contact you directly if you have further questions, or you can contact her. Or, again, if you have any questions regarding our other funding, contact Monica Smith. The next question is a cost share. Regarding cleanup funding is $200,000. And the question is, among who is the cost shared with? Well, it's not essentially shared with anybody. You receive up to $200,000 in cleanup funds, and 20% of that, so let's say you receive $200,000, you would have to come up with $40,000 in cost share. And that is additional money that you would have to go out and leverage. Or if you, Kamisha talked about it, it can be services that you provide. I don't have all the listings. To come up with your part of this match, it's kind of a match. It could be cash. Yes, tied to the piano. $200,000 piano fund. There's a match. It could be labor. It's on slide 30. Materials, supplies, and services, and other non-federal grant funding. So it's more a match that you come up with tied to those cleanup funds. And the next question is regarding job training. The curriculum referred to, is the curriculum obtained through EPA Brownfields, or is it designed by us and our educational partners? So to answer this question is, it is designed by the grantee, you, and your educational partners. The curriculum that we, but what basically is, we give you guidelines on what you would be, you're training for. So Sam said, we usually, HAZWOPR is one of them. And so basically, we set these guidelines, you're going to receive this funding, and this is what you're going to train them on. And I don't have those guys in front of me, but I know if you have questions regarding what particularly we're looking for, you can refer to our guidelines. You can contact Sam Reynolds or Amber Perry. So are there any questions on the phone line that we would like to answer?
Again, if you've muted your lines, you can simply hit #6 to take yourself off of mute and ask the question verbally.
Yeah, I had a question. I'm living in Doña Ana County, and the county themselves have nobody that's focusing on identifying brownfields or neglected areas at all countywide. The city has people that are working on that, but like 5 years ago, the county's environmental division dissolved. So in terms of the identification part of that, if we were working in collaboration with them, could we go for that money for the identification phase?
So are you a nonprofit that you're asking, and you're wondering if you're working with the city? You're wanting to know if you're a nonprofit eligible for the assessment fund?
We're a nonprofit, and we're actually a trust under Groundwork USA, but the county here has no environmental division at all that's identifying or working on brownfields or neglected areas at all on a countywide basis. The city of Las Cruces does, but they only do it within the city limits. So in terms of the identification part of the funding, could we go for that to identify the areas in the county that are considered brownfields or neglected areas?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The assessment funds nonprofits are not eligible for. So the county is eligible to apply for the funds, or the city is eligible, like you said. Unfortunately, the nonprofit is not. It is the county or the city's eligible.
Okay.
Anybody else? Okay. Kamisha or Sam, you want to?
Well, we want to thank everyone for your time today and coming out. We hope this was informative to you, that you learned something about our programs and the things that we offer. We highly encourage and suggest that you take advantage of these programs out here. As a nonprofit, there's a lot of things that you can use, a lot of tools we have right here for you to use to better your communities. So please, you have all the contact numbers, you have all the email addresses, and you basically have the slides and information. Please act with us. Please come in for some of this, these programs that we offer. And again, it's been a pleasure going through this with you today. On behalf of Kamisha Scott, Lisa Rule, David Real, and Hal Ledford, we really appreciate you coming out. And Gene, we thank you for your help with this setup.
Sure, no problem. Thank you.
She Yes.
With that, I'm going to ask everybody, if you happen to look at the final slide, which is slide number 80, and we'll close everything out today. Again, on the final slide, slide number 80, there are two very important links. The first one is the link to additional resources, which include a variety of materials you can download related to today's presentation, including the PowerPoint presentation, some YouTube videos that were referenced, other websites, and other online resources and documents that you may find helpful. So I'd encourage you to take a look at those resources. The second and the other important link I want to be sure everyone takes a look at is our feedback form. If you could follow that link, and if you haven't, if you're not at an internet-based computer right now, to do so afterwards from the seminar homepage, there are links to the feedback form there as well. Just take a minute or two to fill that out. It's a very short form just to let us know how the presentation went, how you participated, and what you thought of the topic, as well as indicate your interest in future deliveries like this. We do personally read each and every one of those, so I would thank you in advance for any comments or suggestions you could make for improving it. The final thing I'll mention again is that on that feedback form, if you're looking for confirmation of your participation today, there's a box you can check when you fill that out to have an email sent to you for your own records. This entire event was recorded and it will be made available on the Kluwin website as part of our training archive. So if you go to kluwin.org/training and click on the links for archive seminars, you can take a look at the several hundred that we have up right now. And this event should be available to download in a variety of formats in about 2 weeks or so. But as Dan mentioned, there'll be a second delivery later on this summer in August. So with that one final check, if there are any other comments or questions?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, there you go.
Thanks,
Kim.
All right, bye-bye.
Now, Lisa, did you take a look at the, I had one extra question that came in online. Did you see that one?
Okay, the someone wants the question states, could you briefly summarize sub-grants and who's eligible? And how much money are they eligible for? And are these only for assessments? Okay. You are actually eligible for a sub-grant under the revolving loan fund, which I talked about earlier, which is money that we actually give to a entity, should I say award to an entity through a grant, and they pretty much set the terms and conditions that they're going to actually loan the money out, or as a nonprofit, knowing that you may not have much money, subgrant the money out to you. And normally there's a match of 20% of the overall money that they are actually loaning out to you, but they also have the option to waive that. So that is a subgrant. And there's a $200,000 limit for a nonprofit. Okay? Yes. And also, if you could stay on the line and more answer to that question, we're going to have Harold step up here just one moment and try to enlighten you on a few things that he knows being a nonprofit on this particular area.
We worked with our brownfield coordinator in Shreveport exclusively, and then with EPA Region 6 in completing our forms and completing our application for our revolving loan program that we had. And we had a plan, so we were able to complete it fairly easily. It was not an ominous process at all. In fact, it was fairly easy to do that. And then the city and EPA approved the revolving loan, and we were able to go from there.
All right, and one other thing, just to reiterate on the revolving loan fund. The revolving loan fund actually comes, again, from the EPA, and it is actually an award that is given to a grantee that comes in probably through a government entity or city, or it could be a quasi-government, things of that nature. And then they have the money in their possession. And you as a nonprofit can say to them that you want to clean up a certain property. And then they can say, okay, well, listen, I got all this money from the EPA. let me set some terms and conditions with you. I could either loan you, say for instance, $200,000, or I could subgrant you, basically give you the money under the terms and conditions that they decide to set forth. And then they could either waive the cost share, 20% cost share of that $200,000 that they would actually loan or subgrant you, or they could say, hey, you're going to have to give us this money, this 20% cost share, based upon this $200,000 that we're loaning or giving to you. So that's how the flow works. From the money in the beginning is given to the entity by the EPA, and then the EPA again, then that entity again either loans or subgrants that money to you as a nonprofit. That's how it works. And again, there's had to be several RLF programs or revolving loan fund programs in your region. Try to find them and see if they'll work with you on cleaning up a property. All right, Jeannie, back up to you.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Sam. Again, if there are no more final questions, looks like we had another question that came in online, and they're asking if there are any funds available for acquisition of property by the nonprofit.
The answer to that question is no.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, again, we've pointed everyone to the additional resources. I just want to remind everybody, since we are having a couple of questions that are kind of streaming in here towards the end, the contact information for all of the presenters as well as mine is available on the seminar homepage. So if you follow the link back to the seminar homepage or you click on the button that has a house on top of the slides, you'll be able to look up the speakers' email addresses and other contact information, and you are more than welcome to contact them afterwards. You can also reply to any of the emails you received from me about this event, and I'll be sure to get your comments or questions to the instructors, as well as the plethora of information of how to contact them that they provided in the presentation, including their 800 number and a variety of other email addresses. So with that, I just want to thank the EPA Region 6 Brownfields Program for coming and putting on the show. I appreciate everyone who signed in. We will be doing some follow-up with those of you on the phone lines just to double-check and make sure we have our head count right. And then we'll provide everybody who organized with that information after the session today. So, again, I want to thank everybody for joining us. This is going to be the formal conclusion of today's presentation on Brownfields Training and Outreach for Nonprofits that was sponsored by EPA Region 6 Brownfields Program. My name is Jean Valance, and I'm here from the EPA's Technology, Innovation, and Field Services Division, and I want to thank you all for joining us and hope to see you or hear from you on a future CLUIN seminar. Thanks so very much, guys. Have a great day.